tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey everybody, welcome to the 100 Season 2, Episode 1, The 48. Today, this is Tari Miller, and joining me is Ben Bateman.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Unfortunately, Chloe won't be able to join us for this season, but wish her well, and hit her up on Twitter, at Chloe Onyx. Cool. So, since you're new to this show... let's get your initial thoughts on the whole first season and the beginning of this episode.
Oh, well, I watched the whole first season in a very condensed period, so there was about a lag of, half a day or so between the finale and the premiere of season two. I really enjoyed season one overall. I thought it ramped up as it got going. And yeah. Definitely right around episode four, episode five, you could sort of see that dark direction the show was going to take, and I thought it was fulfilled really nicely. As far as the premiere of season two, continues the ideas, but gave me a lot of information. That was quite a lot of plot. Quite a lot of plot to deal with in the first episode.
Yeah, it was definitely a information dump. Yeah. But I feel like if they hadn't done it, then all the fans would be like, well, where are all these people that I love and care about?
Right.
Which loving and care about are the same thing. But no, because I definitely, especially if they hadn't gone into like the Lincoln and Octavia thing, I would have been really kind of clamoring for it. And also Finn and Bellamy, which were the really big, standouts from the season finale.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Do you want to just talk about that first? Should we just?
We could, yeah. Let's do that.
Let's just address the fact that basically, and like I said, I mean, this was a very brief transition for me to go from finale to premiere, so it's probably a little more fresh in my mind. But I'm sure some fans went and watched the finale again just to get a refresher.
Right.
I definitely felt like the carrot that was being dangled for me was, okay, the thrusters get, blasted off, and these people get incinerated, and Finn and Bellamy, one of whom I'm pretty certain had been stabbed, though I guess not.
Right.
Just like, where did they go? Are they okay? And I just felt like the only explanation we got was Finn was like, I ran away from the explosion. or Bellamy said that. And Finn was just no explanation whatsoever.
Well, yeah. Well, Bellamy slightly kind of explained Finn. He's like, we both knew the explosion was coming, so we ran as fast as we could, and only one grounder followed us.
The one grounder that was in fact leading the charge and trying to like break into the hull. So he definitely ran away too. Anyway, yeah. I mean, kind of explained. Definitely was kind of the punch in the stomach for me. Was all the suspense was explained in that. That was my explanation. But anyway, all that aside, that wasn't the only thing I noticed. It was just the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured they wouldn't kill off two fan favorites,
of course,
because they were the main They were the main love interests. They were also the driving force between last season. I mean, Clark was a really big portion of it.
Yeah.
But they were the main two sides that she would play off of. You know, one being the war side and the other one being the peace and just kind of like two sides of her own psyche.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose that is true. Well, let's get to the episode in specifics though.
Yes. All right. No more. All right. So we'll start with we'll just continue on with Finn and Bellamy.
Okay.
So we come in on Bellamy running through the forest.
Yep.
And he meets up with two of the other 100
kids.
Yeah, kids. I guess we can't even call them 100 anymore because they're definitely not that many of them.
Because they're 48 now. No, I mean, I guess there's more than 48.
Right.
Total. It's like somewhere in the 50s, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he explains that he outran the blast of the rockets.
Yeah.
Because he is superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
And Finn was close behind him, but he got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Finn is being drug along by one of the grounders, one of the main grounders, whose name I do not remember and no one mentioned, but he's dead now, so no one cares.
Yes.
Yes.
Commander Griven Ilvek or something like that. Who knows?
It was something really, plain too. I want to say it was like Melvin. It was General Melvin.
This was Chuck. This is Chuck, the leader of the grounders. And yeah, sure.
So basically, Finn and the other guy being drugged behind the grounder are lagging, so he decides to kill one of them. Not Finn, because why would you?
And he then states, I only need one of you alive.
Yeah. Because, you know, he needs someone to be interrogated by the commander.
But when he captures Finn and Bellamy together, he keeps them both alive. Interesting.
I'd like to think that he wanted to torture them personally.
Yeah, could be. A thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that sounded terrible.
Terrible. Yeah.
I wouldn't wish that on my greatest enemy.
Something to point out, and if anybody wants to leave this in the comments.
Yeah.
If we can all agree that Bellamy was in fact stabbed. It was dark, and it was a war scene, so like, you definitely get that when there's this, those fast moving scenes like that.
Yeah.
I was definitely looking at the screen and trying to increase the brightness on my computer when I was mm-hmm. watching it because I was trying to figure exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But if we can get a consensus on just did Bellamy get slashed or stabbed, I would be very curious to know anybody else's opinion on that.
Yeah. I believe he did. I mean, you could argue that maybe it only grazed his like clothing.
Yeah.
But then he would have been running around with an open shirt, which I'm sure all of the fans would have loved.
I mean, he's got rock hard abs.
So, it's true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure the blade broke on his abs.
Right.
That had to be what happened.
Were we surprised that we didn't get a shirtless Bellamy shot in this episode?
I was. Yeah. Me and a friend were keeping a counter on every time he took his shirt off.
Mm.
Cause that was a thing.
Right.
And it was all about fan service. Ah, we got our picture up. Bam.
Boom. Excellent. Was this not up the whole time?
Oh. Our engineers are amazing.
Excellent. Well, I didn't even notice, so hold it over on me.
But yeah, so anyways.
They're running through the woods.
They're running through the woods. They both get captured. And then they're right about to get killed by Grounder Melvin.
Yeah.
When Melvin catches a bullet to the back.
From Desmond from Lost.
Yep.
Yep.
What did you think about that?
Okay, that moment was one of the cooler moments from Desmond's part, Chancellor Kane. I definitely liked that entrance. It was cool.
So good.
It was badass. Yeah, it was good. That whole sequence of them running through the woods, the only thing that was on my mind really was like I said, I felt like he had been stabbed. I was surprised they had gotten away. It was very convenient that the one character that was clearly leading the charge to attack the ship was also the guy to chase them because I didn't feel like he would have run away from the pod, but he did.
Right.
The kids that, you know, then attack and try to save them. It was fine. It was fine. I sort of feel like episode 2 forward,
yeah,
you're going to get to just forget about the explanations that they didn't give us from the finale.
Right.
And it should get back to the same level of reasonably well-explained storytelling from season 1.
Yeah.
Which was honestly pretty captivating, and I was pretty engaged the whole time, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main thing is that they were trying to squeeze so much into this episode. They're like, well, we don't have time to explain, so we'll throw a sentence in there, and then you just accept it because that's an explanation. We gave you an explanation, not one that you like.
But did you not feel, and this was my point earlier, and I don't want to harp on this anymore.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Did you not feel a little bit like suspense, suspense, suspense? Oh my gosh, how are Bellamy and Finn going to get out of this mess? Like, that was definitely one of the cliffhangers from the end of this, of the season. It was definitely one of those moments like, what's in the hatch from Lost? Or one of these end of season one moments where you just go to yourself, oh, how'd they get out of that? I hope there's a good explanation for this, and they've almost just breezed over it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt it, but at the same time, like, I've been watching, I watched the whole first season, and like, I know that they always are a little rocky to start.
Yeah.
Just because, like, they got to find their footing again. And, there was a point where they didn't know they were going to get a second season. So I imagine they just kind of, like, were like, how can we best suit, the introduction to this new season?
True.
And so I felt like it was an explanation. It was one that I accept it being a show for teens where, I mean, you won't, they definitely aren't going to kill, main characters. I mean, and maybe you just kind of go, okay, sure. I accept that fact. And, yeah. Cause I mean, I watch a lot of ridiculous things and sometimes it's like, hey, how did these two characters escape, this situation? Well, you know, an eagle flew and, took them back from the mountains of Mordor. It's like, spoiler alert, whatever.
suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a really long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah. It's classic suspension of disbelief, comic books, movies.
Yeah.
Anything that you want and entertaining, that's fine. So we can move on from that, as long as my opinion has been clearly voiced to everybody watching.
No, I'm sure, like, guys, I'm sure that you guys felt the same way. I mean, because it was a really big, cliffhanger. And so you're not alone in that. I think I'm more forgiving of things just because I'm used to being, just kind of, I'm used to not, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm used to just outlandish explanations or just minimalist explanations.
Most television can in fact be picked apart if you want to pick it apart.
I'm glad that they even tried. That's like, for me, I'm just like, as long as they weren't just like, we're magical creatures.
Yeah, right, right. Well, they did explain that they have incredibly advanced systems.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So that's another
ridiculous
reason.
Yes. I really want to talk about
it. Let's move on to the next sub-theme. Did you have any thoughts on Bellamy and Finn running through the woods and being attacked by Chuck?
The main thing that I thought was hilarious is that, so they spent all of last season learning how to become warriors, essentially.
Right. Yep.
And the first thing that everyone does is they jump out in the open, scream, and run straight at the grounder, where it's like, that is the worst plan. He's on a horse, for gosh sake. Come on.
It's an axe.
So I thought that was the funniest thing. Because, and I guess, considering that they're teenagers, maybe it seems like the best idea. Like, all right, we're going to scare the horse with our screams, and then we're going to take this guy down. But he is also a seasoned warrior who has lived in the woods his whole life and would kill you without hesitation. You might want to rethink that plan.
I would add to that, one of the things sparked from that idea about these kids and being exhibited as warriors in the previous season, and then them defying that behavior to service the writing. I noticed that a lot in this episode, actually. That was something that was, I mentioned this to you off air, but one of the refreshing things about season one was that you would get to a moment in the show as the season was progressing where you felt like, okay, this is going to go in this obvious direction because Clark has this conscience, or because Bellamy is, you know, has a heart of gold under his hard exterior, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it would kind of defy that. We have to kill him. We're going to torture him.
Yeah.
No, this didn't work. We're going to change our plan.
Mm-hmm.
These 300 people that were going to be executed were in fact executed.
Yeah.
We didn't save the day. So there's all these things that, you know, Wells dies. Like, there's all these things that are surprising to me. And that was what kept the show interesting.
Yeah.
I did feel in this episode, in a number of ways, I have a number of notes that I wrote down that were just sort of like, okay, if Clark suspects that this is too good to be true. Well, we'll get to that. But
yeah.
The idea just being that essentially those kids would not run at this warrior. They had been trained. They had been warriors in the previous season. It felt like it was trying to service the writing rather than the actual characters that they had given us previously.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. Which, I mean, I think that would be a really good, this is a good jumping off point to get to Clark and Mount Weather and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because my overall feeling about that, or I guess, my overall feeling in that regard, and also kind of when the adults come in, is that now, and I'm hoping that it becomes this issue where these children who have learned to grow and develop into these warriors are now having to learn how to be underneath the rule of others,
right.
Which that I think is going to be the main draw of the drama, is them trying to figure out how to live in a society where they are being governed and all that stuff.
So let's jump to that idea for a
minute. Yes.
So this is a trope now that we're used to seeing in many shows.
Right.
Reference Lost a couple times because there are obvious similarities. It's familiar characters in a strange land. Generally speaking, they become survivors. They at some point are then captured mm-hmm. by a group of either people who appear to be savages or some group that gives them some sort of like defined quarters, right? So in Lost, right. it's the others. In The Walking Dead, it's the governor and his you know wonderfully executed village. This happens a lot, and it almost always ends the same way, where there's something seedy going on. There's a seedy underbelly, and the protagonists have to figure it out. It takes a little while. What I thought was so interesting about it was that Clark immediately sees through it, and she can't believe that it's real. But all of her friends are just immediate these people who had learned to survive just like her. They're willing to accept it immediately. They're so thrilled. They don't find it weird at all. They're not even a little bit freaked out by it. And that whole thing to me was just okay, I'm being led right now. This writing is telling me that Clark is smart and her friends are dumb, and then it's going to switch it on us mm-hmm. and say that it's clearly something is wrong with that place. It's not going to work out.
Yeah. Well, actually, for me, I felt like it was the most true to what teenagers would do. Like,
they are young.
Yeah. I mean, because it's basically like, if I had been camping for as long as they had, the first time that I can sleep in a warm bed and no one is trying to kill me, I think that I would definitely be willing to let down my guard. Clark, having been their leader, I think is more prone to distrust. Mm-hmm. And so that is why she's constantly trying to escape, and she can kind of see through mm-hmm. the gloss. Because, I mean, the president character, he's definitely up to something, and he's definitely really shady.
Right.
I mean, and just to recap it for the fans, I mean, you've seen it, but I mean, yeah, we find Clark, she's in a white room, she was right across from Monty, but he's gone now. She escapes by busting out a window, and she takes this girl, Maya, hostage, and she's led into the dining room. They recapture her because she's a contaminant. She had basically 10 minutes until she was cleared from being quarantined.
So they say.
Yeah. And then, now she's being courted by this president who's trying to essentially keep her in a submissive stance.
Yeah.
Or he's trying to...
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
What you said was true. I was just taking it all in, thinking about it again. It just... Did you have a problem with the chronology in this episode? That was something that I started to notice in the bunker. And maybe this is intentional on their part. But you're dealing essentially with wardrobes that are some mixture of the 1940s, 50s, and then like some of the clothing mm-hmm. looks like it's from the mid-2000s. And it's a weird... Because you have to say to yourself... All of this was in a bunker. Yeah. Every item of clothing that they're getting, in theory, existed in this bunker.
Yes.
So that begs the question, because they haven't explained to us yet what the year this is all supposed to really take place, unless I missed it. If any of you can point out to me, again, in the comments, the year this is supposed to have taken place, at least in the show version, please let me know. But I haven't ever picked up on it.
Right.
They mention 97 years in the future. Mm-hmm. That happens a bunch of times.
Right.
Clearly, the technology of you living on a space station in this advanced, evolved society... That's got to be pretty far in the future if we're living within the realm of reality to some degree.
Yeah.
But the bomb shelter, or Mount Weather,
mm-hmm.
is filled with pieces, all the things like in... What was the president's name?
I only caught Dante in the note that he left her at the end.
We'll call him President Dante.
President Dante. this is a smooth name.
It is.
Want that. Hello, my name is Dante. Anyways, but my rationale, or the way that I kind of like thought about it, was that there's a chance that this bunker has essentially been routinely stored and stocked with things as time has been going on. And then basically, as everyone was funneled into it, they took whatever they were wearing at the time, but then there were also clothing from the time leading up to it.
That makes sense. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, because I would assume I mean, we don't really know a lot about when everything was unified and when the nuclear fallout happened.
Yeah.
But I assume there was, you know, Cold War leading up to it or something like that, and eventually it became a thing.
So we're, I suppose we are supposed to believe that the chronology is something to the effect of it being, the war was around today, and that this, what we're seeing now, is 2113.
Yeah.
Something.
I would assume so, yeah. Somewhere around now, or maybe somewhere shortly in our future, because of everyone having to make, have everyone having space shuttles in the sky at that point.
It still doesn't explain a lot to me, though, because it still feels like, wouldn't there be a bunch of, why is his office filled with an old hunting rifle, and it looks like most of the things, and the piano and the china that they're using, it all looks like it's from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It was a weird choice, probably from the book. It's probably a larger explanation in the book, or if it's not in the book, then the writers decided to take a liberty and give us a very, like, perplexing context for this next season, at least the beginning of the season, to take place.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that you could assume, you might think, is, so all these people funneled into this this Mount Weather bunker, right?
Yeah.
So maybe, and this is just my own take on it, is perhaps they brought whatever they thought was most important to them.
Right.
And then we know from the president's tale of what happened the last time they opened up that crap load of people died.
Sure.
So there's a chance that maybe he's been collecting other people's things.
Right.
Every time they die, he's like, I like that. I'm president. I'm going to take that.
He's a creepy dude. Sorry. probably true. Yeah.
But I mean, cause that's the only reason that I could think of.
Yeah.
Otherwise I mean, I just assume that it's all there for style, because honestly, if you were having a bunker to keep a bunch of the last survivors of Earth, you would want it to be as minimalist as possible. You wouldn't want extra frills like art supplies and pianos and extravagant.
Yeah,
you just want, like, hey, bring your things, like your clothes, your rations, and maybe one effect.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah, and then they have a garden. What did he say? Our food that's grown from our...
Well, they have an agricultural center.
Yeah, I suppose it's true. Well, I mean, all right, I'll stop just, like, criticizing the legitimacy. Let's talk about some things that we actually liked in this piece of the episode. One of which, to me, was Clark's pretty tough.
Clark's amazing.
She's tough.
That's what I love about her character, is that she's so strong and, like, super heady. Like, I mean, she gets a little aggressive, and she kind of feels like a wild animal in this context. But, like, she's one of the stronger female characters out there.
Yeah, you know what, another, and this is probably a little fringe, but something I noticed, and I noticed this in season one, but maybe it's more evident now because they're putting her in tight clothing, but you usually get these CW characters cast, and in almost every case, it's a girl who's like 100 pounds and 5'1", and you can almost tell on television that they're like, they're real skinny. And Clark's like a real person. She's like a female example. Like, she's got some meat on her. She's not like a big person, but like, her proportions as a person look like somebody who actually has like, she has like meat on her arms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's not 100 pounds, clearly, or if she is, and I don't know, but it's nice to see, because she is a strong character.
Yeah.
And she looks like a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've just sort of noticed it throughout the show that's, and it's nice they cast, that they chose as a network, like, we're going to feel comfortable casting somebody who isn't 90 pounds and, you know what I mean, made of bones, like.
Right.
Essentially her character's, Octavia.
Mm-hmm.
Octavia is a classic CW lead. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Like, I can definitely see that.
The difference between the two. Mm-hmm. Like, she's anyway, something I noticed. It goes along with her being a strong female character and a kind of a good example character.
Yeah. I liked the explanation as to why the Grounders and the 100 could exist outside of Mount Weather. Because that was a big thing that I was talking about last season, where I couldn't understand why everyone was still alive, because, you know, none of them had been exposed to Earth's flora and fauna. And so the moment they stepped foot on Earth, they all should have died of some plague.
Right.
But you get the explanation that they have been exposed to sun radiation for so long, it's built up their immune systems, it's built up their whole tolerance to radiation. So it makes a lot more sense now, and I'm super glad we got that explanation.
Yeah, it's one of, I mean, sometimes those explanations work. Other times, like in, what's the famous one they always reference in the new Star Wars movies? His something-something readings are off the charts when they're talking about Anakin and how they knew.
Oh, his midichlorian?
Yeah. There's midichlorian count. That's the classic one. That's the nerd one we always reference. It's like the worst explanation of all time.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's nice when a subtle explanation like that actually works.
Right.
As opposed to in Star Wars.
Yeah. We're just going to make something
we'll
up.
Just make it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I definitely like that. To me, one of the best parts was like, okay, she's in a white room. Mm-hmm. She's been like cleaned and clothed, and the whole there's 100 years of this place is so well preserved. And she wakes up, and she's a little freaked out, but she just goes for it. She just smashes the camera, smashes the window, cuts her arm open, doesn't even flinch, picks up a piece of glass, and just like, to me, it was like, this is the character that we saw develop through season one.
Yeah.
That was nice. Okay, so anything else to add on the Clark bunker?
Words. No, I mean, that's the general gist of it. Like, I mean, moving forward in her storyline, I mean, she meets up with Jasper and Monty, and they're drinking the Kool-Aid.
It's just the three of them? I guess it is just the three of them. Where is everybody else?
Everyone else is around, but no one has names.
Hmm.
Because most of our named characters are either out in the forest, dead.
Or dead, yeah.
So, I mean, I assume someone will pop up and they'll be like, hey, remember me from first season? Hmm. I was a, bit player.
Right.
But those are the main, at least the main starters that we come to love. And so they are eating the cake, drinking the Kool-Aid, and she's trying to convince them that they need to get out of there, and no one's having it.
Sure.
And so she attempts another escape.
Right.
And she gets right up to the door, and Jasper stops her.
Yeah.
And I, like, this moment I thought was it was a really good place to be in, mostly because, like, she was at this crossroads where she could open it and try to save her friends. But, I mean, as Jasper is telling her, it's like, you know, she doesn't know if they're alive or dead. These people are more equipped to look for her friends. I mean, what is she really trying to prove?
Yeah, and as Jasper says, if you open the door, these people are going to die.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. That's her making the decision to keep these people alive in lieu of finding her friends.
Yeah.
It's showing some value to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And the final moment, when they are then eating, the next scene.
Yeah.
She has the smile, and she's... Oh, before that, though?
The meeting with the president?
So she meets with him.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo. He's creepy. I'm creeped out. He gives her on her bed the colored pencil set.
Yeah.
And she's not drawing, though. She's working on designs on the exit.
She's not going to give up. She's going to pretend like she's, she's going to pretend like she's one of them. But all the while, she's definitely going to go try to find her friends. Because they depended on her. And I think, like, just like Jasper, I think she kind of blames herself if they are dead.
Hmm.
And so, I'm hoping that she finds her way out by the end. Though there should super duper be a way for everyone to get out, because these soldiers are going and exploring the forest.
Yeah.
So there's some way to get out without killing everyone.
So, right, definitely. Well, they're out. But remember, when they find them with the tear gas, they're in full protective suits with gas masks.
Right.
So that's the protective gear those guys have to wear if they want to go out.
Yeah.
So one thing, so I want to move on from there, because I think the next scene that we deal with is where the adults find the kids, and then Raven bleeding out and surgery and all that.
Before we get there, let's talk about iTunes. Hey guys, so we produce over 70 hours of content every week, and all that we ask is that you like and subscribe, So if you enjoy what we're doing here, then, you know, go to iTunes, slap us with a 5-star rating. Go on YouTube, leave us some comments, tell us what you like, what you don't like. And we'll definitely, like, we read all your comments, we check all your ratings, and we just want to give you the best show that possible. And the only way that we could do that is if you give us your feedback. So feel free to do so, any time at your leisure, basically. Cool.
Please do.
Yeah. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk some Raven.
Big time. So, okay, here's one of the first things I noticed, and this was one of the I wrote this note. I thought about it a little bit. So Bellamy attacks Murphy. And I have a problem with Murphy's character. I think Murphy should be dead by now. It's obnoxious to me that he's still alive.
I agree.
The reason that he's still alive is because he's evil, mm-hmm. and they want a villain.
Yeah.
And he's the best villain that they've given us so far. And they need you to have characters that you want to see, you want to hate. It's like the love to hate concept.
Yeah.
I still think he should be dead. The nature of the show is that his character would be dead by now. He would not have survived. He got, like, gashed in the leg, being tortured by Griven Chuck Ilbeck.
Yes.
Guy. whatever the guy's name we're using is.
Grounder Melvin.
And so, but that aside, so Bellamy attacks him. I was a little bit surprised that with everything that the adults just went through on the Ark, mm-hmm. getting down to Earth, the whole, knowing that the kids have been down there for what's been a few weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
And that they've had, they're covered in blood. The ship's exploded. They weren't just like, while walking back with them, Finn and Bellamy, tell us what happened. Tell us everything you just went through.
Mm-hmm.
And that Finn and Bellamy, they would say, well, we got attacked by this army and we had to, you know, we had to burn them out. They killed a bunch of our guys. We killed a bunch of their guys. There was some killings, some stranglings. We just had to hang this guy Murphy. I mean, a lot happened, but they could sort of break it down and give him some of the...
Yeah.
It's obnoxious to me that he attacks him and that Kane is just like, tase him. He's arrested. We're the government. It's like, come on, Kane. You've shown enough development in your own character in season one for being a power-hungry like jerk
mm-hmm.
to being like a compassionate, strong character that I actually kind of rooted for. You're just going to come down with guns, tase the kid, and say you're arrested? That doesn't make any sense. That's giving zero credence to the fact that these kids have just been down on Earth showing that it's habitable and having to fight a war and killing each other.
Right.
They've had to do the things that they've done. You break them up and you ask what's going on. You don't just tase them and arrest them. That doesn't even make any sense.
Well, I mean, I think at this point he's definitely in control mode because, I mean, now he has to lead the adults. He has to try to find all the children. And technically the last time he saw Bellamy face to face, he knew him as a murderer.
True.
So at that point, I think that he was just trying to kind of take control of the situation because Bellamy would have killed him otherwise.
Right.
But
I suppose I shouldn't say it doesn't make sense. I should say it's a very specific character choice to give Kane.
Yeah.
That's what it is. They're establishing his ignorance through a piece of writing that I guess it works, mm-hmm. but it's the same sort of thing I was talking about, feeling like you're being very much led to feel a certain way.
Right.
His hair trigger to act that way
mm-hmm.
was, okay, this is a scene to show us that the adults are going to be dicks. That they're in control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the point.
I mean, yeah, basically.
I guess point taken, but it didn't necessarily feel like it was as realistic to the situation as I think I was hoping it might be with the emotional growth that I felt Kane had experienced. His character was pretty good by the end of the first season.
He was.
He was pretty selfless.
Right. But, I mean, he was selfless to a point. I mean, the whole thing is he was selfless to get everyone back on Earth, but now that he's back on Earth... There's no Jaha to kind of counterbalance his aggro mode.
The ego.
Yeah. So I think that he's personally taking it upon himself to really try to reel this in. And I think that's going to pull different parts of him out.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think that he will be as much of a jerk as he was on the Ark, but I definitely think that he's going to be a taskmaster, just trying to control every situation.
Yeah. A little bit of an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Bit. Yeah. Question. I want to know your opinion.
Yeah.
I was noticing that throughout this whole show, they've made a concerted effort to give us a dark show on the CW. Mm-hmm. They've tried to make it pretty gory. They've tried to push the envelope.
Yeah.
They've tried to give us the Hunger Games meets Walking Dead on CW with attractive people. And now we've hit this point where there's been a lot of gore, a lot of violence. How much further can they take this? Because the evolution of these characters and what we're seeing, I almost feel like I'm ready for it to get even more dark.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much further they can push it. And I'm wondering, will it remain interesting staying at the level it's at? Or because the evolution of the society they're building, naturally, there would be more violence. There would be more darkness.
Right.
They're dealing with a bunch of murdering psychopath kids and barbarians and some weird pancake throwback breakfast creepy something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I get you. And I think that, I mean, because when the show was starting, there were all these ideas.
Hmm.
And then as they kind of like peppered in a little darkness, the executives were like, yeah, yeah, you can do that. Maybe pull it back a little bit.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point after episode 4, the execs were like, do what you want. Just make sure that, you know, the FCC will be fine with it.
Right.
And I think that it will get dark to a certain point, but I don't think, I feel like after, a certain number of named characters died, they just stopped. So I think it'll only get, dark to the point where you see unknowns dying, but it'll never, they'll never take away anyone that you like.
Unless it's like season finale, season 3.
Yeah.
Killing Marissa in the OC. It's like that sort of thing.
Right.
Where, okay, 3 seasons where you're going to kill one of the main characters because we just need to.
Yeah. I mean, it still gets dark in its own way. Like, it's, right now I feel like they're all about the telling as opposed to the showing. And maybe as time goes on, they'll be able to show you a lot of the darkness. Cause I mean, we got a little bit when, Murphy was telling his backstory about his dad who got killed because he was trying to take money for it, or not money, but he was trying to steal medicine for Murphy because he was sick, and his alcoholic mom dying in a pool of her own vomit.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that is the kind of darkness that they can get away with.
Yeah.
I mean, and they get away with a lot of gore and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
But I don't think that it's ever going to be like Game of Thrones level where like, hey,
it's not HBO.
You love this person? I'm going to murder the crap out of them in the worst way possible.
That was a moment I liked, not Game of Thrones. A moment in this show that I liked was, I actually, as much as I think Murphy should be dead, he's alive. And I liked his little story because it was trite and predictable,
mm-hmm.
but well told and acted. And then the Raven was just like, boo-hoo. That was great. That was realistic to me.
Yeah.
Was like, all right, you're a 16-year-old kid that kills people. It makes sense that it came from you having a screwed up situation with being blamed for both your parents dying, blaming yourself. And you're a kid, so emotionally you don't have a capacity to deal with this maturely, which is, I'd probably hate you if I knew you in real life anyway. And then this other person listens to your story and it's like, I don't care. I'm dying too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel sorry for you. You murder people.
Yeah.
Basically.
And he shot her.
Yeah.
She should never forgive him.
It was nice that she pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Did you a little bit wish that there had been a bullet in the gun? Did you a little bit feel like that would have been the whoa moment of the show where you're just like, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved it. But Murphy is, I feel like he's always going to be on this like redemption arc.
Ugh.
And so, cause
I hate it.
I know. I wanted him dead the last season. And I feel like it's never going to happen because people love him. And I understand why, because he's the closest thing to like a badass that they've mustered of amongst the kids.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be around for a while, but I am waiting for him to satisfactorily die. especially after, because dude, he like killed a bunch of people.
Bunch of people.
And he tried to hang one of our main characters.
He murdered like while sick and sleeping. 2 people.
Yeah.
At the end of this last season. Like, he's not a character that is morally supposed to still be alive, which, again, is maybe them pushing the envelope a little bit. Maybe that's the reverse version of saying, this guy murdered a bunch of people, you hate him, but guess what? There is no justice. He is alive.
Wow.
And he's pardoned of his crimes.
There you go.
Interesting.
See? Always subverting expectations.
Yeah, something.
But yeah, so... That's that's that. Like, Murphy and Raven, Bellamy and Finn have now joined the adults.
Yep.
The adults are establishing Camp Jaha in yep. honor of Jaha up on the space station.
The sign, which they artfully put together very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really nice. The penmanship was amazing.
It was great. It looked like it was even, I looked like it was maybe like a piece of metal. They had cut out the, you know, like stenciled it out. It was great. There's clearly some artists made it down from the ship.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so
it's like, go with guns and save. Some, we're going to make a sign. Oh, you need our, no, I have to make this Camp Jaha sign. I can't go with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Guys, let the artist work. And then before we get to our little last teaser,
okay.
We got to talk about Lincoln and Octavia real quick.
Oh yeah.
So, Lincoln and Octavia are going off and trying to escape. But she's been hit with an arrow, and so they're treating her wound, and it turns out that she's been poisoned.
Yep.
Lincoln has no solution. Not what solution? No antidote.
Yeah.
And so he goes off digging for bugs to get an antidote, and she starts screaming.
Hmm.
You think she's hallucinating when you see a giant mutant?
Which they just give you for a second. It's like the Elephant Man. It's crazy.
It's odd.
Yeah.
Which I guess is now a new grouping.
It's a wrinkle.
Yeah. I'm hoping that that's explored so much. Because we already have cannibals. We already have, like, you know, guerrilla fighters. Why not bring in mutants?
Yeah.
The idea of natural selection was brought in when the president was talking. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they have their own community. Maybe we're the plague on their community.
Who knows?
So I liked that aspect, and now they've gone back to Lincoln's village.
Yep.
The
Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, it's Lincoln Memorial, and his name is Lincoln. Cute, cute, cute. Yeah, what did you think of that?
That didn't really bother me. That
really?
Was like, to me, that was like a little Easter egg. It was like we haven't really established where on Earth we are. Like, we kind of have. I think they said the Eastern United States. So, I mean, if you want to give me a landmark, I don't care. Like, do you know what I mean?
It was,
it is cute. It is cute. You're named after the statue. way to go. Like, for me, the...
I was hoping it would have a monkey face. It would just be like a... it would be like Planet of the Apes on the 100.
Or just that they had, like, drawn, like a savage helmet on it or something. No, for me... I'm going to be honest. I think that the Lincoln Octavia story is probably the weakest in the show. Octavia is a pretty frustrating character. They did this thing in the first season so much where it was like, Octavia loves this guy. Octavia loves this guy. Octavia loves this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of, she falls for this guy, Lincoln. You don't really know how old Lincoln is. If you try to think about it and you think about how old she is, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
It's like kind of not somewhere you want to go. And then the last part of it, and again, this is CW, it's just like, she's poisoned, Lincoln. How about you take your shirt off and show off your abs again? Like, that's kind of the reason that people paid attention to who you were. Because, like, the first time we really got to pay any attention, you were just, like, strung up.
Right.
Strung up. Just abs. You know what I mean?
Abs before words.
Yeah, fully. His character development with him barely, when he, my name is Lincoln. And then later he's like... Octavia, you want to go get a cup of coffee? I'll teach you how to speak my language. I speak English incredibly well. You know what I mean? They definitely took some liberties. Maybe he was a popular character, so the writers wanted to develop it. But I just think I'm not super interested in their romance.
Right.
I'm not super interested in – he is kind of interesting. She's kind of frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them, just their story alone away from the group.
Yeah.
I'm not super interested in watching it.
I'm really hoping that – essentially, he's going to get killed, and she has to figure out life on her own, become a grounder by herself, or, like, you know, just explore this world that is still so much of a mystery to us.
Yeah.
So that, to me, would be the most appealing thing to happen to her.
Yeah.
I also am not a big fan. This is the thing I kind of vocalized a lot on last season, that I don't like them being together because she is really young and he is a lot older, and it makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, he's 28.
Yeah.
And best case, she's 17.
Right.
I mean, which I don't think she is. I think she's supposed to be like 16.
Because she spent 16 years underneath the floorboards. So she's 16, maybe just turned 17.
There are no laws on Earth.
That's true. Everything goes. If you can eat human flesh, you can date a 16-year-old.
We make our own laws. Let's move on from that idea.
All right. So cool. So now that that's done, we get our little clip of Jaha.
Yep.
Because no one on Earth can communicate with him. And it turns out he's just been sending out blanket messages, just kind of reporting on what's going on with him. He's running out of oxygen.
Yep.
And he's essentially just waiting to die, staring at pictures of his son.
Yep.
Because why not be the most sad person in the world before you die?
Big time.
And then we get a little thing.
The screaming. I referenced Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Ghosts in a spaceship. In an abandoned spaceship. It would be a little too much for me if they tried to give me a subplot on a spaceship with Jaha and like a screaming ghost. There's a lot of great movies that explore this concept.
Yeah.
Event Horizon and Sunshine come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I need it. I kind of almost feel like I didn't need Jaha in the episode at all. Kind of was like, why didn't we just get the Jaha drinking whiskey I'm dying on the spaceship at the end of season one and just be done with it?
Yeah.
Because I don't expect him to make it to Earth.
I don't either, but like I think that I'm hoping that it's him going crazy. I would actually watch a show or at least an episode where it's him going nuts until he dies. Like at some point he's like drawing on the walls with his own blood and like just going completely nuts because he's running out of oxygen. He's alone on this spaceship. He's sad. He's drunk. Like I just want them to just bring this out as much as they can, make it, because you wanted it dark, I want it that dark.
That sounds really dark. Sounds like you want it incredibly dark.
Yeah. I think he'd have fun acting it out.
Yeah. Hey, he's a good actor. I liked his performance. Before we wrap up, are we going to predict what we think?
Yes. We're going to move into predictions.
Oh, I jumped the shark. Sorry, guys.
Oh, no. No. The show will never jump the shark.
Predictions. Oh my god. Yeah. My headphones, I just heard it. That's great.
You have some predictions for us, sir?
What do I predict is going to happen? I probably should have thought this through before. Why don't you do yours first?
All right. So I've made lofty claims throughout, but I will say that I think that at least in the next episode, we're going to get more of Clark trying to figure her way out in this new society. And eventually trying to convert the others to see what she sees. And then I hope that we spend some time with Abby because she doesn't know the status of Clark. So I want her to kind of feel those emotions and to experience that with her.
Yeah.
While also trying to figure out what their new camp Jaha is going to be. And I assume there's going to be some kind of political power struggle at some point because why not? It's a thing. It's a new civilization, and they're going to have their own bumps.
Hmm. Two predictions. Finn and Raven are going to have a moment together because she's recovering from surgery.
Mm-hmm.
She will be okay, strangely enough. Is she going to be paralyzed? Maybe. I don't think she'll be paralyzed.
I hope so.
I think, yeah, that'd be dark.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Feels realistic.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a sort of a weird moment of like, where's Clark? I don't know. I still love you kind of thing. And I think that you're going to get a redemptive Murphy moment. I think he's going to have to do something courageous to try to save someone or gather something. Because I believe that maybe he'll have to pair with Finn and go out. Maybe he and Finn will escape together or something.
Yeah.
Because I believe that Bellamy is going to be locked up for a little bit. I don't think they're going to let him out.
No.
I think they're going to use this time of Murphy being one of the main guys down there to try to spoon feed us some Murphy good. Which is even more troubling because he's a murderer.
Yeah.
He strangled dying people, sick people.
Mm-hmm.
Suffocated him. That's what I think.
Okay. That's a good prediction. I don't want more Murphy good. I want him to try to like oppose everyone and then
shot
just
to death.
Shot to death and then, or I want him to sacrifice himself nobly, and then after he's done, I want them to spit on him.
Oh, man!
The character. The actor playing him is amazing. He does a great job.
He does.
And if he didn't, I wouldn't feel this way. But, like, he does such a good job that I want a really satisfactory end for this character.
You always say it. Anna Gunn on Breaking Bad and his sister Janice on The Sopranos. The love-to-hate characters are so important in shows.
Yeah.
And the quality of the actor there is so important. Mm-hmm. Because they drive so much the way you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I agree.
Cool. Well, that wraps up this week's episode.
Lovely.
So thank you for joining us. Ben, where can they find you?
My name is Ben Bateman. You can find me on Twitter at Ben_Bateman.
Cool. And you can find me on Twitter at TariJ. That's TauriJay. And I'm on assorted panels here on AfterBuzz. Have a wonderful afternoon and take care of yourself.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.